Hello and welcome to Audio Curtains, Curtains for Your Ears. I'm Russ Bickerstaff, a theater guy for the Shepherd Express. I write and maintain the Curtains blog on expressmilwaukee.com, which is likely where you found this podcast. Back on August 8th of 2014, which is this month as I speak this, I had the opportunity to talk to local actress Emily Craig, who is going to be leaving town soon to go pursue other things in California. She had decided that she's going to do Dial M for Murder. It's just something she always wanted to do. And so they're going to be doing it in the basement of the Brumder Mansion this coming August, later on this month. Actually, later on this week it opens as I speak these words. Did have a chance to talk to her. This is a roughly half-hour interview in which we got a chance to talk about various things, including making physical drama very real on a very, very small set in the basement of a historic mansion. The interview in question took place at a cafe right downtown Milwaukee on Wisconsin Avenue. And so there's going to be a lot of background noise. So be prepared for that. I have eliminated the really, really noisy parts at the beginning and the end of the interview. And so what you are about to listen to is actually pretty audible. Again, I am working with no studio, and I talk to people in cafes, so there is going to be that background noise. Without further ado, here is myself and Emily Craig discussing Dial M for Murder.
So how did you get involved in Dial M?
Actually, I wanted to do it. I knew I was going to be leaving. It's true, though. I knew I was going to be leaving. It's a show I always wanted to do, and I kind of baited Bob a little bit. Zimmerman is directing the show. He actually is the reason that I started doing Milwaukee Theater.
Okay.
And I wanted to, if I was going to do a final show, end with that as well. So it was just such a positive experience, him being my first real director for Pirates of Penzance years and years ago when Shorewood Players was still around. So I kind of baited him a little bit, just kind of testing the waters to see if he'd be interested, but just by saying, oh my god, this would be so fun. It's like something out of Alfred Hitchcock, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, that would be neat. I'm like, really? You really think that would be neat? Well. So, yeah, we looked around at a few places. I kind of almost wanted that house setting. I went to go see Patricio's show at the Villa Terrace. And I just remember thinking how amazing the curtains looked and how it reminded me of Alfred Hitchcock, but it was way too big and spacious to do such a such a production there, and Brumner just seemed to fit perfectly. It's cozy, it's intimate, and at the same time it has that feeling of a, you know, a nice house, which is exactly the environment we want. And it's also, you know, cuts us on set production costs,
yeah.
So which really helps.
Yeah. There are multiple locations, though, right?
In the Brumner?
In the play.
In the play? No, it all takes place in the house.
Huh.
It all takes place in the house from beginning to end, the script does.
Interesting.
The movie, it moves a little bit in location.
They would have to, yeah.
But it still mostly takes place in the house in the movie as well.
Okay.
So, no, it's all in the house. All in the living room.
Yeah? Okay. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
It was originally a play. Is this that's the script you're going with?
Yes, right? We're going with the play script.
Yeah.
So, I mean, actually, if you really look at them side by side, the only thing that Hitchcock really changed, beside adding a dash or two of more of humor, was that he changed the male love interest's name from Max to Mark. That's really about it.
Yeah. So, and you always wanted to do this?
I did. I'm a huge Hitchcock fan.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I'm also a huge Grace Kelly fan too, I guess. So for some reason, this play just always stuck in my head. It was, I always felt with the movie, as much as I love Grace Kelly and as much as I love Hitchcock, I always felt with the movie there could have been one or two things maybe done a little differently. I'm not a fan of how distraught Grace Kelly is through the entire movie. That bothers me because I don't see her as a distraught woman. Mm-hmm. In vast other things that I've seen her in, she's always played a fairly level-headed, mm-hmm. if not still very feminine, 1950s feminine version of a lady. Mm-hmm. So Dilemma always bothered me, and I don't want to say I want to correct that, because that sounds awfully presumptuous, but I want to correct that. So.
Well, it's a different perspective on the same script.
It is, yeah. I suppose. But, I mean, back then,
it was
a different world.
It's what you see in the script that you would like, you know.
Yeah, portrayed.
Yeah.
So.
And who better to do it but you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, because you don't want to trust that to anyone else.
Well, of course not. It's way too important. I'm lucky enough to have people who are willing to help me do what I like to do. That's the nice thing about Milwaukee, I guess, is everyone loves the projects, so.
Yeah, so you just planted yourself right in the middle of this thing?
Yeah, pretty much.
And you've got our director you can trust?
Yes, definitely. He's fabulous, and a great cast. We have Randall Anderson on the team, who is phenomenal. It's actually a little intimidating working next to him sometimes. He's such a sweetheart, and at the same time, I'm just like, I don't know if I can match you toe-to-toe. But I'm going to try.
I don't believe I've ever talked to him where it wasn't in character, but I just sort of assume that he's just this guy from the early 20th century.
He says he's from the year 1940-62. Or is it 1930-62? Somewhere in there. I think it's 1930-62 is where he's from originally, so he claims. But he is, in fact, if you do ever get a chance to, he is just the nicest, most genuine, sweetest guy who loves to help in any way and gets so excited about the work he's doing that it's really great to work with him. He's always enthusiastic, no matter how tired or what kind of day he had. He's excited to be there, he's ready to work, and he works hard.
Had you seen the recent show he was in with...
Yes.
Yes,
we actually made it a point as a cast to go see it. So we made it a field trip. And it was phenomenal. I have to admit, it wasn't one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
I love the camera trick that he did, but they did so much more with that script than Hitchcock ever did. I loved it.
Yeah, it was I very uncomfortable for me physically.
Well, I think also emotionally. I mean, yeah, the theater was a little cooler than the day you saw it. But I was very deliciously emotionally uncomfortable through the entire thing. I enjoyed it. So I had no idea what Randall was going to do. So all of a sudden he walks on stage stuttering and with a cane. I was just like, oh dear God! I don't want him yelling at me ever.
Yeah, and how long have you been rehearsing?
We started, I think, the second last week of July. Randall was still in rehearsal for Rope, so we concentrated on the murder scene, which is the heaviest scene out of all of them, really. It actually involves me moving. That is never good, so I tend to fall a lot. So I figured the more rehearsal time I could get with that, the better. But, so, you know, in case there are any unhappy accidents where I take a tumble into somebody's lap in the audience or fall in the fireplace and break the poker. So.
Have you had a whole lot of chance to rehearse in this space?
We've actually been really lucky. They've let us there almost every night. That we needed to rehearse. I mean,
no, from day one, you've been rehearsing in the basement.
From day one, we've been rehearsing in the basement. From day one, we've had most of the set, too, actually.
Well, yeah, it's sort of been there for a while.
it's we're going to do a few things. We're going to change stage a little bit, but it's been great because they've been so flexible working with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially with, I mean, we're not there tonight or last night because of the Mark Twain show that's going on. But otherwise, we're there from the rest of the time till we open.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And you're working, you know. I mean, it looks like a small space from where you're sitting, but I would imagine it's that much smaller when you're actually moving around in this space.
It's deeper than you think it would be, which isn't terribly helpful because half of the deepness is out of the audience sight line. But it is. It's actually we've been playing the how do we not end up in a triangle every time we move game. But it's been interesting because I'm used to working on smaller stages.
Right.
But this one's pretty small. It's like, oh, we can't shout and flail our arms here. Hey, we might hit somebody and be there's no me. They're right there.
Yeah.
So.
And not really much for a backstage.
No. There are two dressing rooms though. Actually, it's more accommodating than you think it would be. But as far as sitting backstage, there aren't many places to come on and off.
Yeah.
So we're kind of inventing our own. Hopefully it works. If it doesn't, we tried.
Are you running into problems that you didn't expect as far as like portraying the character?
Because
I would imagine like you love this story.
I do. I really love this story.
And now here you are moving into it, like actually, you know, hanging out with the character. You know?
I was a little concerned. I won't lie. I was a little concerned because she just the way her lines, if you read them straight out, and if you think about Grace Kelly's portrayal of this character, which I'm sure was heavily influenced by Hitchcock as well, it's hard not to see her as somebody who just sits there and just accepts what happens to her. And to me, that's very frustrating. So the first couple times I read it, I'm just like, rude. I was mad. I was kind of pissed. So I thought about it. It's hard not to be angry when you feel like you've been handed something. I don't want to say useless, but that's almost what it feels like. It's like, well, what am I supposed to do besides sit there and go, well, he tried to strangle me, but then he didn't, and now I don't know. Help.
What did you expect? I mean, you were familiar with this character.
I know, but sometimes you get so excited you don't think making that leap.
And so you're actually looking at the dialogue and you're thinking, wow, she's actually kind of weak.
So I talked to Bob, who was very helpful with some insight. He pointed out the fact that she couldn't be weak because she does manage to successfully fend off her attacker. So she can't be that, you know, mousy in any way.
Yeah.
It was hard finding that line between this typical 1950s housewife and what is portrayed as a typical 1950s housewife, and still independent enough that she doesn't really need her husband if she really sat down and thought about it, or she didn't really need Max either, or, you know, she could essentially take care of herself. The time dictates that she doesn't. But if you gave her a chance to sit down and go, well, kind of independently wealthy, I totally can hold my own, apparently, when some guy comes at me with a carpet piece and he tries to end it. Maybe I don't need to hang on so hard.
So it's really more the strength and the transformation.
Yeah. Well, no, it is, because she really wants that. She really wants that house life. She wants the husband, you know, who she can pour a drink for at the end of the day. She wants what every, I don't want to say every girl, because not every girl wants this, but every girl who wants a relationship wants. She wants to feel useful within that relationship, but also have her partner be useful as well. She wants the give and take. And she's really excited when she thinks she's getting it. And completely broken when she realizes that's not what's happening to the extreme nth of degree. And then she needs to somehow volley back from that. So it is a growth, it is a transformation, but it's not, I don't think, necessarily in the traditional way, because she does start strong.
She just doesn't know it.
Not at all. Sometimes knowing it is the growth.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine a lot of that comes from like direct interaction with the other characters as well.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, not just being attacked, but, you know.
Oh, no. Although that's very helpful in some ways, I suppose. Randall is fantastic to play off of because you're always sure he's going to be solid, but you're still never quite sure what exactly he's going to do. Mm-hmm. As a character, as an actor, you know what he's going to do. He's very A, this is B, and it's great to work with them that way. But if you're playing as your characters, you're just like, oh, okay then. Hello, darling, you came home. What's going on tonight? He has a great ability to help you make the scene real, which is great. And Thomas, who is playing Max, also is quite good at that as well. Poor boy is so tall, and that stage is so small.
Yeah.
But it's just fantastic. I mean, even the scenes I'm not in, I love sitting and watching just the interaction that's going on. It's downright diabolical, which is great. So I don't know. It's like we were doing the negotiation scene the other night, which is where Randall is negotiating the murder with Michael Guthrie, who is playing the killer, C.J. Swan, or Captain Lestgate, whatever his name is. He has many. And I was just watching the interplay, and, you know, this is like the 800th time we've gone through it, and as we go through it, it gets smaller and smaller and more detailed, and it's gotten to a point now where I'm just like, go on. I've seen it a million times, but it's fascinating watching them go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, I mean, it's as challenging as it is to fabricate anything on stage.
Oh, yeah.
To fabricate people fabricating something in a space that small, where
every nuance can be picked up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you can, you know, any theater goer is going to, you don't even realize how much you're necessarily working when you're going to see a show. I mean, and how much the disbelief you have to suspend when you're going to see something, even down to, I know these people don't know each other as well as these characters do.
Yeah.
You know, and but I have to pretend that they do, you know, because, you know, people don't realize necessarily that that's going on. But to do that authentic and make it feel authentic,
mm-hmm,
when you're that close to everybody,
it's a little frightening when you actually realize it. It's just like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, and you're used to working on small you're used to working on small spaces, but I don't know that necessarily that travels all the way back. But I do know in that first couple of rows, it's like,
it's right up there.
Yeah,
you are right up there. We were negotiating certain scenes to make sure we didn't end up in people's laps.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we want to, you know, scare and suspense and traumatize the audience a little bit, but not that much.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm, you know, sitting on the person in the front row going, hi, how's it going? He's strangling me. Did you notice that?
And that's tricky, too, because, you know, when you're in a space that small, I mean, and mm-hmm, again, it's tricky enough to try to make physical conflict look authentic on stage. But to do it where you're that close.
It's something that we definitely thought about very hard, and we have a few surprises and tricks up our sleeves.
There's characterization that has to happen there too.
Oh, definitely. It definitely went deep into when we were casting,
mm-hmm,
who could work like that, and I almost see it, every violent scene is this way. Every staged violent scene is this way. It's like a dance. It really is a dance. You got to know where to set your foot, where your partner's going to be, how you move together, how that's all going to, you know, play out, and how you start and how you middle and how you end. It's like a very aggressive form of the cha-cha, really. But it's you got to have somebody that you trust. That you work with. I've worked several shows where the people I've done stage violence with, I couldn't trust them as far as I could throw them. They meant well, but they weren't paying attention, or they got too into it, and somebody ends up injured. Usually me.
That's an interesting perspective on it, because, like, I've been trying to, you know, this has, like, been an issue for me since I first started, into, you know, like, really getting into it. Larger productions, I'm like, halfway across the theater, you know,
yeah,
halfway across the house, I'm watching, I can tell from back there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That it's not, it's, you know, it's so fake, it's so stiff, you know, and yet, any smaller production generally has a more authentic stage combat experience, general.
Usually, and I was usually it's because nobody knows what they're doing and they're really punching each other.
Okay,
not usually, but I've been in several situations where that has been the case. So
that's actually aggression, I'm
saying. There is. I don't even think it's an actual act of aggression so much as whoever's doing, and this is going to sound so bad, and I don't mean to pick or pinpoint, but it's usually male. Just whatever reason crosses that line from this is, we're faking doing this to we're really doing this. I don't think it's even a conscious thing. I think they just get caught up in what they're doing, which is understandable, but still unacceptable because people are getting hurt.
So,
I've come off stage with blood running down me. I've developed some very nasty bruises. I've had glass broken on me. I've been hit in the face and the stomach with rifle butts. It's because people weren't paying attention. It's a dance. It is a dance. If you ever watch Dancing with the Stars, you watch how they make it look so easy. It's ridiculous. It's like, oh, I could do that, and you try it, and you fall on your face. It's the same thing with a fight scene. You got to make it look so easy. You got to trust each other enough where you're comfortable with each other that you can. It's like falling backwards. There has to be that trust there. I think that's probably why the scenes look so stiff. Nobody's taken the time to take the training or to get their know their partner well enough where they trust them.
Yeah. Good. Well, I mean, and I was thinking maybe it was an equity thing, you know.
It could also be an equity thing. Us non-equity actors are willing to take more punches. Fact. So.
Yeah, but yeah.
Actually, I believe Chris Elst runs a very good fight choreography class. I missed it. I was very sad. I had a rehearsal. Yeah, but I highly recommend that for anybody who does anything that has choreography. You don't want to hurt your partner. You don't want to hurt yourself. You ruin a show that way. Somebody gets hurt bad enough.
Yeah, I would imagine. But, I mean, and the thing is, especially with this, you're relating to the character through that scene. For me, it's difficult to imagine distancing yourself from that the way you would distance yourself from, like, a conversation. And so, like, relating to this other actor, you know. Because it's more visceral.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
You can distance yourself from you're hanging out with your character.
Yes.
They're hanging out with their character.
Yes.
All four of you are interacting on stage.
Yes.
You know.
Absolutely.
But things get that much closer when it's physical
contact. Yes. Yeah. Well, again, it falls back to what's under the character, the two people playing the characters. If you have a decent amount of trust built up there and movement and whatnot, you'd be very surprised at how easily that flows back into your character. It's almost like puzzle pieces falling into place. Because you can do this and your body physically remembers what you're doing, so all you really have to do is shut off the voice of you in your head. And just kind of, it's almost autopilot, really, I almost want to say.
And maybe that's where it comes from, because, like, you know, and it's such a disconnect, like, in a professional production, where it's like, he's angry at her, she's angry at him. He advances on her and does something physical. And then it's just blocking.
Yeah, well, no, and that's how it starts. I mean, we start the murder scene every time before we run it, we start it by block. Okay, we're here, pause. Now we go here, pause. All right, let's do this. Just more of a muscle memory thing. And then we go, the last time we actually ran it, the next thing I know, the scene is done, and I'm out of breath, and I don't quite know what the hell happened.
And haven't we all had days like that at one time or another? I would like to thank Emily Craig for taking the time to talk to me about Dial M for Murder. Dial M for Murder, of course, running August 21st through the 31st at the Brumder Mansion Bed and Breakfast at 3046 West Wisconsin Avenue. That's 3046 West Wisconsin Avenue in Milwaukee. Tickets are $20 for regular and adults, $15 for students and seniors. More information can be found at MilwaukeeEntertainmentGroup.com. That's MilwaukeeEntertainmentGroup, all one word, .com. For more information and for tickets, you can also call Tom at 414-388-9104. That number again, 414-388-9104. Once again, this is Russ Bickerstaff thanking you for listening.